The Shire of Nanup would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung people of the Noongar Nation as the traditional custodians of the land of which this podcast is recorded on, and we extend our respect to the elders past and present, and we extend that respect to all Aboriginal Australians living within the Shire of Nanup.
The Royal Parade was going along, and in Rolls Royce was one of the princes who grandfather grew up and went to school with. And he yelled out his nickname, and he stopped the Rolls Royce and got out and walked across to talk to the soldiers, which was grandfather. And the first thing he said to grandfather, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "We had a war to win."
This is the Nanup Oral History Podcast. This afternoon, we're sitting in the RSL Hall talking with James Green, or Jim Green, as we know him. Jim is a walking wealth of knowledge regarding his family history, with detailed recounts of his grandfather's time at war, touching on the importance of debriefing with fellow soldiers for reintegration back into life, and how surviving the war developed a sixth sense. The Green family were in service to the English royal household, including looking after their horses, before some relocated to Australia. And in this episode, Jim refers to the connection to royalty. In his recount of exploring the Wild West, we learn how the Green family ended up in Nanup, starting with building and stonework. This is part one of Jim's interview. So, Jim Green, thank you so much for coming to talk to us. I am incredibly excited. I remember years ago you started telling me your wealth of knowledge on Nanup, and I remember saying, someone needs to get a book out of you. And look, this is a start.
Yeah.
You're a wealth of knowledge, so thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Yep.
Before we get going, can you just introduce yourself and your long line of family that have been in Nanup?
Yeah, well, James Green, born and bred in Nanup. 19th of the 9th, 45, out of hospital in Nanup. It was all modern in those days. And before that, my father was born in Bunbury but grew up in Nanup. Before him was his parents, my great-grandfather, who moved to Nanup with his brother. They were travelling the world and teenagers and stopped off at Fremantle and... Well, my great-grandfather found them at Fremantle Harbour and said, "What are you boys doing?" And they said, "Oh, we're just going to have a good time here in this Wild West." And they were British boys, and he said, "Well, you better come with me and I'll give you work building houses and doing jobs in Nanup." So that's how the family ended up starting off down here in Nanup, early 1900s.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So they were building houses here.
Yeah, great-grandfather Whittley was builder, and he got Mr Hall to help him. The stone buildings that are all in Nanup, he did most of the stonework. Mr Hall did the brickwork, and you'll have a look at any of the buildings that's got fancy brickwork in the corners and around the windows. That was Mr Hall's work. Grandfather did most of the rest of it. I got paper records of him building the Masonic Lodge up on the hill, and that's all out of hard... granite and quartz rock, hardest rock in WA. And I've got photos of him actually building that. It's been passed down. So, and the man that's bought it and owns it, I've given him copies of that, so he's happy with it too.
It sounds like really tough work.
Yeah, it was horse and cart in those days. And great-grandfather Whittle had the first T Ford sort of small truck in Nanup, and it was used for many jobs, including he'd jack it up and he'd use the back wheel on a belt to run a planer to plane the wood for building the buildings in Nanup, way before my time.
And then moving forward, what did your family do and how did you grow up?
Yeah, well, Grandfather Green and his brother, they both enlisted in World War One. In the 28th Battalion here in Nanup, number 74 and 75, which is, I found out from Canberra Records, is a very low number in the 28th Battalion, Light Horseman. And there's a big story on Light Horseman, but that'll take a while. But yeah, they both went off to war and they trained in the Middle East apart from here in WA before they went, and then went to Gallipoli and through all the battles of that, survived it. A few wounds. Grandfather was in the Lone Pine when they took that, and then they were sent down to the Neck at Gallipoli, and they were the third batch of men to go to that, and they were mainly the 28th Battalion and some Victorians, and they were supposed to charge these machine guns after two lots had been machine gunned, and Grandfather said, don't be stupid and get an officer to stop this slaughter. And just as they were about to charge, they were actually charging as a return message came back up to stop it, but it was too late. Most of the men went over the top and fell back in dead. And Grandfather reckoned that was pretty bad. And then after Gallipoli, they went back to the Middle East to train and wait for the next posting, and they split them then. Half the Light Horse stayed there to defend the Suez Canal, and the other half, Grandfather and his brother, said, oh, we'll go to France, to the French line, because that's closer to their home of England. So they went back there, and Grandfather's brother got blown up in mid-1916 by a shell. And Christmas 1916, Grandfather was back in England, convalescent after being almost dead in hospital and that. And so he was recovering, so he went home to see his mum Christmas 1916. And went AWL, it's in his records. Had about 3 weeks off and went back to the barracks and that on the 1st of 1917. And then went back to the French lines to continue. Yeah. So there's more, I'm getting it all documented and updated now, because he did things after that. And he got honorary discharge by the King of England. I've got a copy of that document. And it's quite good. It's got his honorary discharge and George Darrington Green. And then it's got JG next to it, which was Jim Green, so his brother that got killed. So the King actually signed him off. Yeah, because they knew the King and them from England before they ever come to Australia.
What you're documenting, are you keeping it all together?
Mainly Grandfather's war record, because that stopped after he got dispatched in 9th of November 1917, he got put on a ship to come home.
Mm-hmm.
But he met up with his Light Horsemen at the sewers at Port Said, and they said, we're going on a desert campaign. So he went and found his horse that had been there for 2 years, and sent most of his gear, still stayed on the ship and come home. So he was lost. yeah, he went with them, and within 3 weeks at the end of October in the Middle East, they were at Beersheba, and he told us all about how they rode through the night in the desert to get there for the charge of Beersheba, which he was in.
Did he continue on in the war?
Yeah, well, he still spent the rest of the war.
Yeah, okay.
In the Middle East, he went through the charge of Beersheba, and also he is the man that got ahead of everybody else after they jumped the machine guns and chased the Turks off and went into town to save the water, because they'd have water in the desert. Well, the whole campaign had failed. And he got and found the wires from a water trough, found the control room, got another soldier to help him break the door down, and he got in there just in time to stop the German pulling the lever to blow up the water troughs and wells. And he pointed his revolver at the German, and he said, this is his words, if you pull that lever, I'll blow your bloody brains out. And he said he didn't pull the lever, so I didn't have to kill him. And that's in books now, that somehow that German didn't get shot and was lucky it was grandfather, as the light horse were known to shoot first and ask questions later. So lucky it was grandfather, because he'd seen enough killing by then.
Yeah.
But then he went on the Desert Comb phone after that. He told us he knew Smithy with the planes. He went up to look where the Germans were in the desert with him. Oh, he did all sorts. And then they went sort of pushing the Germans and Turks back out of that area in the desert. And he went with Lawrence of Arabia doing that work. And they kept on, from then on, they kept chasing the Germans back out of there and the Turks. And till they got to Port Said, after they'd got to Damascus and everywhere else, they'd won the war there. And then they put in money to get the statues of the Light Horse built at Port Said. And there's copies of that at Albany. And now Canberra's got them too. So they were famous.
Wow. So what happened next? Did he continue to travel with the war?
Well, he went back to France after that, and back into them in 1918, all the French lines along the battles. The Germans were pushing them out of the French line, and he's in a group of... He joined up with some of his other Anzacs, that the actual first group that had gone through it all. He got back with them, and they're along the river in France, which was the line and the German machine gun towers, and they broke through them a couple of times. And so he told us how they did that. And even then, the King of England and Prince went over there to thank them for the great work they were doing. So he got wounded again, but survived that, finished the French lines, and then after the war, they'd won it. They'd beat the Germans, and they were the... And the French loved them. They were very popular with all the French, he said. And then back to England after the war, they went back there to wait for ships to get them home. And he did something famous there too. They had a royal parade to thank all the soldiers. And anyway, the royal parade was going along, and in Rolls Royce was one of the princes who grandfather grew up and went to school with. He yelled out his nickname and said, "Good on you." And he stopped the Rolls Royce and got out and walked across to talk to the soldiers, which was grandfather. And the first thing he said to grandfather, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "We had a war to win." And after that, he never actually seen the prince again, who became King of England as well. So, we had a... Like I said, there was a bit of contact there, and that was because they grew up around the castle and went to school together.
Wow, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
What a connection.
Yeah.
So the ships had arrived to bring everyone home?
Yeah, well, he didn't come straight home. He stayed with his soldier mates, the Anzacs, and he didn't get here again two times. But he ended up over at Melbourne with them, and they went up near Ballarat, where that group of soldiers, that they were Victorian Anzacs, and he'd been fighting nearly all the time off and on with them. And so they went back near Ballarat and sort of had a wind down after the war. But they never got any great hero reception or anything. They just all got together and relaxed a bit. And then after that, he was there for probably about a month, and then he finally made his way back here to Frio and back home. And
so had he been in Nanup before? Oh, yeah, he'd been in Nanup
from,
before the...
Yeah, about 09 up till 14. He was here January 15, they enlisted. So He'd been here a few years working and riding the horses and exploring the west. Him and his brother, they were down the caves at Yelling Up and round with Muirs down in the south riding horses. And there's a place called Green's Pool down there where they said those silly Green brothers went swimming. And, so that's before World War One.
Wow. So after the war, when he came back to Nanup, what was life like for your family?
Well, he was, what would you call it, war wounded in many ways. And after he'd been through hell on earth, he couldn't sleep. He was always restless, they said. And but he settled back in Nanup a bit. And then there was one, two, three more children born, so in the 20s, and they're all my aunties and that, they're all gone now. So then he stayed here for a while. He, because of all what he'd been through in the war, his sixth sense was switched on, and his seventh sense, which nobody knows about. And he could see things without being there. And once he was in the pub, and this is a true story, and he said to him, something terrible's happened. And they said, what do you mean? He says, I've just seen it. Because when he was in the trench warfare, you couldn't see the enemy. And so you had a sense they were there, or you were dead. And so he survived that. And then he said, you wait till the train comes in. Anyway, the train was out Alice Creek Way doing the logging, for the timber mill in Nanup. In those days, they just sort of started up in the 20s. And the train was coming in, blowing its whistle. Anyway, what had happened, this bloke had got killed on the landing with a log had rolled on him. But grandfather was at the Nanup pub and seen the image of it. And that was because of the war.
Yeah. I've never heard that effect before, but it makes a lot of sense that the war would do that to you.
Oh, he said when they were in the trenches with the Turks, we'd crawl in every night, and he said we'd bayonet them. He said the trench would be full of Turks in the morning. Yeah, horrible things. He said wars are horrible.
Yeah. There's a lot of things, but some people would say you have a bit of a sixth sense. Would you say that it's been passed down?
Probably, I don't know whether you'd get it passed down, but it probably does happen. I picked up a little bit because I did a lot of time in the bush and forestry. I'm virtually in a bush town anyway all my life. But when I was out in the forestry and we'd walk all day doing jobs, I didn't have a compass, didn't have a map. I just was bush walking. We'd mark out blocks of bush or boundaries of stuff and go and mark trees, all that type of work. We'd be miles in the bush. I'd have other blokes with me, even officers with their compass and maps, and because they get that training. But I never had map training, not that type anyway. And at the end of the day, we've walked miles all around the bush, and then I'd say, we'll head back to the vehicle, And a couple of times I said, we'll go back this way. And I said, no, why not go straight back to the vehicle? And they said, what do you mean? I said, we'll go straight through here and we'll be back at the ute. We left there this morning. And they said, some would, some wouldn't. But anyway, others would follow a road or a track or a forest fire break. So away I'd go, and a few would come with me, and we walked back and onto the track, and here 100 metres up the road is the ute we'd left early in the morning. And they said, how do you do that? So a bit of that, and then when we were chasing bushfires, we'd be out in the middle of the night, and with a machine or whatever, or the fire trucks, and be trying to head a fire off or chase around the boundary of the fire. And if you can cut it off in the night, you stop it. So we'd work all night with a dozer and trucks. And a couple of times the bloke said, where are we? We're about here, I think. And I'd say, just keep going, and we should cut around the front of this fire, and we'll end up on, there was Rainer Road, way down near the south coast. And sure enough, we cut around this fire and within a few hundred metres, we were onto Rayner Road, stopped the fire, weren't lost, Rayner Road back out onto Stuart Road and civilisation again. So, yeah, it was handy.
How do you think you picked up all those skills?
Oh, I don't know. It's just awareness. I think some of it's there if you are out in the Never Never, or, you know, it could be the middle of Australia, it's harder. But in the forest there's trees and everything. So, and the sun, where its path, or the moon if you're lucky, you can virtually navigate, probably like the sailors did in the early days, you know. But it's there, but I'd say most people today, if their smartphone went dead, they'd be lost.
Mm. Jim, thank you so much for sharing stories from your grandfather and the war and everything you're documenting. And if listeners want to keep learning with Jim, part two of Jim's interview details Jim's connection to the land. So join us for that. You've been listening to the Nanup Oral History Podcast. If you are not a Nanupian, please come and visit our small town. We would love you to come. If you are a Nanupian, please share it with your family and friends. We're really proud of this, and we hope you are too.
This podcast was made possible through the successful funding by the Department of Community's Age Friendly Community Program, facilitated through the local government's professionals and supported by the Shire of Nanup. We would like to thank all of those who have shared their stories to make this podcast happen. The podcast has been produced by the Shire of Nanup's Economic and Community Development Team and edited by Simple Ben Stories.